Hi there, I'm Lily. Welcome to the Vital Horse Podcast. I'm a veterinary surgeon passionate about what our animals' behaviour can alert us to. I focus on nurturing the innate nature of animals to address the deep roots of health, well-being and vitality. Our relationship with our horses is an inextricable part of this. I am guided by what they show me. Many people say, if only they could talk, but they can tell us so much and we can communicate back. This podcast is about you being able to help your horse fully by finding out what's going on, deciding how best to help, and then doing this ethically and effectively. In this way, we can investigate and treat behavioural signs and underlying health problems, pain, or dysfunction in our horses while actually improving our relationship with them. Let's find out how. In this episode, I had a wonderful conversation with Peggy Hogan and Anachalev. I started taking Peggy's online courses that she runs with Monty Gwynn, I think it must have been 2 years ago, and was really lucky enough to go and spend time with her in person in California in 2022. When I say the experience was memorable, I really mean it, and I drove a 3,000-mile road trip through 6 states and 6 stunning national parks after my time with her. I then met Anat via Peggy and Anat's online course on cooperative care, which they are running again starting the 16th of March, and I highly recommend taking it. It complements my Needle Shyness online course superbly. Peggy and Anat are amazing teachers who are so knowledgeable and skillful about the nuances of ethical and effective training. Peggy Hogan fell in love with horses at age 3 when her sister put her on a pay-per-lap pony ride in Griffith Park, Los Angeles. Since those early days, Peggy studied natural horsemanship in depth, though in her heart she was hunting for something different. She also immersed herself in the teachings of Peggy Cummings, a master clinician and founder of Connected Riding. When Peggy found positive reinforcement, she found the right match. The results were horses who would wholeheartedly respond and offer behaviour freely when given choice and control. Learning from trainers of other species, Peggy investigated ways to add more and more shaping, capturing, luring and targeting to her programme. Today, when you watch Peggy's videos, lectures and training, you will see a variety of horses at liberty, offering behaviours that range from freestyle to agility to medical procedures. She trains full-sized horses as well as miniature horses. Anat Shalev is an Israeli horse trainer owned by 5 opinionated horses. Teacher, consultant and the founder of Horse Friendship, Israeli Positive Reinforcement Horse Training Educational Programme. As a teacher and trainer, Anat is devoted to broadening the horse's extent of choice and influence, promoting a mindset of co-control for horse and human, pushing the boundaries of what horse training can be. Anat is passionate about errorless learning, training for cooperative care, and shaping varied movement behaviours benefiting the horse's mental and physical health and well-being. Anat crossed over to positive reinforcement horse training in 2008 from a career working in traditional horsemanship as a therapeutic riding instructor. She founded Horse Friendship in 2015, a local educational programme teaching behaviour science and positive reinforcement training to horse people, spreading knowledge and pursuing change toward a more compassionate approach to training and caring for horses in the horse world. Anat is a fear-free certified trainer, IAABC supporting member, and avid returning participant in Susan Friedman's LLA classes. Anat has studied with leading animal trainers, teaching classes and lecturing at conferences both locally and internationally. Okay, so welcome, Peggy and Anat. I think the best thing to start with would be just to introduce yourselves, really, and to give a bit of background as to how you came to be working in cooperative care and kind of doing it in the way that you are.
Short. We're talking short. Should I jump in, Anat? Or do you want to start?
You start.
Okay, Peggy Hogan here. How did I get involved in this? I'm going to say that my love of horses started at 3 when I first saw one. I wasn't a horse owner until I was an adult and married. But I would ride them. My mom would take me to to this local area where we would rent horses. So I did a lot of riding as a kid, but really waited till I was an adult before we actually owned one. I started a more formal learning process when I got into natural horsemanship, and realized there were a lot of skills I didn't know, and that looked like the best thing at the time. And I certainly understood earlier forms of pressure release, but it was a good learning lesson for how to use negative reinforcement. But in something inside me just didn't, it wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't what I dreamed of. I dreamed of being able to sit on my horse and have this wonderful communication system in place. And I wasn't coercion, it was not coercion. I was not using force. I wasn't using pressure. And I was at a natural horsemanship clinic when the clinician said, "You gotta listen to this lady. Her name is Alexandra Curlin." So that was late 90s. I read some stuff and saw her, and I went, "Okay, now this sounds much better. This sounds what I really want. My heart wants this." But I still love training without, excuse me, but I still love training without pressure. I like training when the horse is working without halters and leads. I like seeing if I can get behavior. So, learning how to shape behavior from other people and other clinicians and Ken Ramirez and trainers of other species, because there were not that many horse trainers out there. That's my passion. And from that, it's like ready-made, because if you're not going to use coercion, and even if your food doesn't work, if the what I have isn't good enough to help the horse make a transition from "I don't wanna" to "Oh, it's okay," or "I will volunteer for this," that's a big process. And so my path was directed by working without the external aids and using positive reinforcement to get the behavior. That really led, it opened the door for a cooperative care. Because if you're not going to make them, now what? And so that door got opened really early and got more formalized as I was associating with Care Prior Clicker Training and the staff there and the faculty there. And I kept bringing ideas like, "Did you see this? Watch this. My horse does this." I harassed them. And it was wonderful. We had great conversations. In 2016, I presented with Ava and Emily, Ava Bertelsen, Emily Johnson Fay. And we presented the animals in control, and that's where the word start buttons got started. And now we're trying to expand on that, because as like Anant knows, the word start button conjures up a certain kind of thing with people, like, okay, I will just push this button, and then, or they will push a button or a target, and now it means I can do anything I want. And so we're always exploring ways to help people understand that it is a conversation. So I'm stealing a lot of what we're going to talk about, but that's where my journey has happened, is it's progressive from giving the animal choice and agency. I love that word, Anant. And hopefully that was short.
Yeah, that's great.
Did
I
it.
think yeah, it's really important what you say about just to point out this the development of techniques from outside the horse world, because things like the cooperative care stuff, it is gaining traction and popularity in our domesticated species. But I mean, when I was training in vet school, I had there was no mention of it whatsoever, and that's we need to be. It's crazy that a whole, certainly my whole year at vet school will not have learnt about it from vet school. If anybody knows about it, and it should really be a thing that we're employing, and not so much just when we have a problem, but in preparing in general. So it tends to be once we have a problem. So say for example, I'm coming at it from the needle shyness point of view, thinking about it as a when you have a problem. But really, we should be preparing our domestic animals.
And we should be teaching the horse owners, because it's different.
Oh,
The
that's right.
horse owners, they're not trainers, and they're having to face these things without support. And they're bringing their horses to the vets saying, "Here, fix it for me." And the vets are saying, "Well, we're not trainers. Where's your tra-?" It's a dialogue that needs to happen. Yeah.
And it's easier not to fix, but to prepare them. You know, it's such a so much easier to build a positive association.
Absolutely. Yeah. And how about you, Annette?
So I had the similar story of as a kid, loved horses, got my first horse at around 30, and but then I got this young year-old filly, and she had some issues, and she very fast got the label of the dangerous horse, and actually she led me to find different solutions, because thank God, with the pressure, it was very hard to win with her. With pressure, you go immediately into punishment, and I had it was very hard for me to go there. So, and there was I didn't have a lot of answers when I asked. So it was about finding new ways, sometimes inventing, or Peggy was on my way there, and cooperative care was part of that, because with my mare we had issues with trimming and shoeing, and then I got more horses, and they kind of brought up other challenges, and it was an amazing journey. I feel, we're still on it, because it's still about getting better and finding more ways to let them be participating, being a part of the process, not just object of care or tolerating care.
Not as an inspiration at this, at giving the horse's voice. I mean, she's truly inspiring in
I
this.
think
It's inspired me.
I wish I could say it was because I'm such a wonderful, person, but it's just that I have this opinionated horses, and there is no way we can do something to them unless they say, I'm ready. So
I'm
we had
ready.
to. Yeah. So I love those opinionated animals.
Yeah, thank goodness for them, right? Because
Yes. Oh.
otherwise they're usually the guides and teachers for you, unless you're going to go kind of stronger and stronger in a non-cooperative direction, then you have to become inventive and creative, and they're amazing at they keep teaching you what else you need to become creative at in order to help.
Yeah, and creative, this is a big part of the journey, right? Being creative. And so it's fun. I mean, I think it's so reinforcing for humans too. I mean, what could be better? The best dreams that your animals would enjoy doing stuff with you, even if it's, practicing medical care. I always feel it, or cooperative care. I always feel it's kind of, it can become really fun games. It doesn't have to have this label.
Absolutely.
So
Yeah, that's brilliant. I wonder if we should actually just explain, because there may be some listeners who are not familiar with some of the terms, or there can be some confusion over some of the terms, like reinforcement or reinforcer, and negative and positive reinforcement, and then also what
Pick me,
yeah, go
Let's
ahead.
start.
I told the knot yesterday. I said, I get that one, because I really, really, really think there's a misunderstanding with the whole idea of reinforcement. And I'm going to say the formula is reinforcement means the number of successful repetitions the animal experiences so that they learn that their behavior results in the arrival of whatever it is that they're wanting. and are working for. So that means the behavior has to strengthen for that's positive reinforcement. And the way that we in the field can test that is, does the behavior repeat? So here's the flip side of that. What we see a lot of times in teaching is someone will say, "Oh, I like that. I'm going to click for that." They feed them and they say, "See, I reinforced them." And I go, "No. We have to test to see, does this behavior repeat?" And again, reinforcement means the animal has to have several repetitions, and we have to know how to see if they're learning and acquiring a skill based on the effort that they're putting into getting that reinforcer. So I said a lot of words. I probably said it to you cleaner yesterday and not, but I really want people to hear that. It's not what we do, it's what they do to get what they want. And then it strengthens when it repeats. Now we have some training skills and understanding of that term.
Yeah,
Thanks. Really
so
wanted
it's not. Can I take that and
Yes.
you say
Yes,
it
always.
in a different way to help? Sometimes
Yep.
it helps me
Always.
hear it in different ways. So it's not the thing, whatever it is, whether it's pressure or food. It's the effect of what we do. And if, like Peggy said, if the behavior keep repeating or strengthen, so. And then we and because I think that's sometimes confusing to people, and maybe that's taking it to a different direction that feels that if they give an animal a carrot at the end of the whatever they do,
Right.
it's it, surely they use positive reinforcement. But sometimes, I mean, and here we were talking about positive reinforcement. Maybe later we'll go into the negative reinforcement, but adding food to training can be sometimes frustrating, can be
And
even
in aversive.
can be punishing to an animal if they don't know how to get that food or what they need to do, and or can be just like we used to say a cherry on the top. So the animal will respond to pressure, and then after they respond to pressure, we add food, which is either not the important consequence, not the or the or it's even become can be poisoned, can be associated with the aversives. So.
Pill pockets for dogs, and contingency. So, or contiguous. So that's another important part of this. The deaf horse I talked to you about, Lily. Okay, why was I getting so much successful training, even though I was clicking? Well, she wasn't hearing the click, so it went on for 2 months. I got all this wonderful behavior, but the reinforcer overlapped the behavior. So that my timing of delivering the reinforcer with what she was doing, and she learned that her behavior mattered. So it was contiguous. So I love that's another Susan Friedman term. The reinforcer was contiguous with the behavior. So those that means that animal made the association, which is part of reinforcement, right? Anand, I mean
Yeah.
that's another part of what reinforcement is.
Right. If we were taking it back to your question, which was very general about reinforcement, then maybe we also can consider that both negative and positive reinforcement works, right? By the science definition, they make behavior repeat or strengthen. But it's all. But the difference is the emotional experience, right? Is it a relief from pressure? Something we don't want by definition. It needs to be aversive. We need to want to either avoid it or stop it, or is it something we want to gain? And that not even talking about all the. And maybe we should talk about it later about the some negative effects that can happen with negative reinforcement, but with positive reinforcement we get that discretionary effort, the part where animals really want to want to behave. They'll throw in They're throwing extra effort. So, and that's lovely. I mean,
That
that's.
is lovely. That's huge. That's what usually when people really convert was, and they go, wow, look at that. They're giving us. And may I please add one last little layer to this layered sandwich of this huge issue
Absolutely.
of reinforcement. But that is what the other common thing I see when people that have a rich background in negative reinforcement pressure relief then release, and they can be the softest trainers in the world. But the technique of that is that you've got your aversive, you've got the thing that they're moving away from to get the behavior. And we can't let go of that pressure until we see some shift in the direction we want. So that teaches us as trainers to withhold. We're waiting. No, that's not it. No, that's not it. We're waiting. No, that's not it. We wait longer. We take that mentality and we bring it to positive reinforcement. Now we have food, something the animal wants. And we go, we're waiting. We're waiting. That segues into what Anant was just saying. We can build real frustration by standing there withholding, withholding, withholding. It's much more important for someone to that's involved in positive reinforcement to really grasp the fact that you pay for the slightest try. Don't stand there and wait. Make your efforts from your horse be really easy, successful. Make them successful. Because she's right. It's something where we can actually create frustration. And that's because of our learning. Our learning, we bring that in there, not realizing the effect. So
Yeah,
that's reinforcement. What?
I wanted to. So we're bringing all sides, yeah, to consider. So if we are using food in a really, I want to say positive way, but what is positive? It's kind of confusing, but in a way that the animals know how what they're getting into, and it's emotion, a good. Positive emotional experience, then we can actually use behaviors and cues as reinforcers. So it's not only the discretionary effort, we can use the behaviors themselves. They catch that association of being fun to offer, which is something that is impossible with negative reinforcement. Not only that we can accidentally create fear, you know, it's like we use pressure. Sometimes we don't want to use extreme pressure, but we kind of animals learn to generalize their association or fear or avoidance behavior. So if we're kind of like using our hand gesture instead of moving away, they're starting to run away from us. Or and usually the animal will do, you know, the exact what they need to do to avoid that pressure. But with positive reinforcement, we can use behavior to strengthen other behavior, and that's huge. I mean, when we'll talk maybe later on cooperative care, I mean, that's something we can use
Yeah,
Yep, easily.
to our advantage. Yeah.
I think the maybe it might turn thinking on its head sometimes, this way of
You think?
when you know in trying to sort of achieve an outcome of a behavior. We think we need to do something to the animal, and it's actually how can we respond to what they are choosing to offer?
Well, I say that again about 5,000 times. That'll be the rest of the podcast. Just keep repeating that one thing, focusing right on what they're offering. That's so big. Such a change of mindset.
And they look at you sometimes in amazement when they realize this is the deal instead of the previous deal, perhaps that they've experienced
But
where
the people or the horse look at you?
a
I'm
horse.
just kidding. Both.
Both, yeah.
Sometimes both,
So I think this would actually be quite a good segue into the concept of start buttons, actually, because you mentioned earlier about maybe if people hear that term, they may think of something like a pressing a button or something. And there's actually so much more nuance to a start button than that. So to give a bit of background, this is something that you could use to as a way of proceeding with the next step in a procedure. But like you said earlier, it doesn't just give you a green light to do anything next, but it gives this agency in the process, which is a huge part of it actually being a cooperative process. So yeah, if you'd like to, well, take it away with the concept of a start button and and how the power, oh my goodness, of a start button as well.
Yeah, so Peggy, I think I would love for you to talk about that, but maybe I'll just drop something and you'll take that ball onwards, because I think part of what is so amazing about that is that we give them control, right? And actually, control is another reinforcer. If we already talked about what are reinforcers, research, we don't need our own assumptions. Research found, having some sort of a control or influence, choice is really something we are all, find reinforcing. So maybe that's a good place for Peggy to jump
And
in and take
I
that.
do want to acknowledge both Anat and I are devotees of Dr. Friedman. Thank goodness, because there were so many things I thought that I had been taught during the years that I look back and I realize they were constructs, they were ideas that people made up. It just sounded good. I went with so much that just sounded good. So when I found her and realized, the science behind training was a welcome relief to trying to sort through the mythology that was surrounding horse training. So therein, the choice and control. There is research that says control has a place in being called a quote primary reinforcer, so that there is enough research being done now that we could say control is as powerful as food or whatever other kind of reinforcer we're using. The fact that the animal can say, I'm doing this. They have control of the pursuit by offering behavior and choice. Another really neat group of people that have kind of taken the internet by storm. Oh, Anat, help me. Okay, this is Masa and Sean, and it's constructional affection training. And they work with Joe Lang. And so they're talking about the fact that not only do you want to have the food that's in your pouch, but you can have hay on the ground and the ability to leave and lots of different ways that the animal can gain reinforcers. Because again, if I have the best reinforcer available and I'm going to hold out, and that horse is going to get whatever it is, whether we want to touch or pinch for, do preparatory for shots. If I've got the best, or load them in a trailer, and they're anxious to get that, so they'll offer behavior, but it's under duress. That's
A
still a
level
form
of
of coercion.
coercion,
Yeah.
a level of coercion. So, yeah, the
So we're
degrees
learning
of
all the
coercion.
time. Yeah, we're learning all the time. By contrast, when I was watching Anat years ago, because we were talking about eye care, we both had horses that needed eye care, and her horse kept kissing her, and I'm going, no. Why are you letting your horse keep kissing you? My brain was just, but she nailed it. That was a very reinforcing behavior for the horse. It had a rich history of lots of reinforcement, and they were doing stuff, and they would take a break, and the horse would give her a couple of kisses, and then they would move on. And it took me a wake-up call to say, there's something going on here that's really great. Why am I deciding that it has to be under complete stimulus control? And they can't offer me that kiss when we're doing cooperative care and whatever, or whatever it was I was doing. So, she has a real handle on the behaviors that are offered and what we can consider a reinforcer. So back to Cooperative care. So choice and control or agency or all of those things are big important components to what we do. And the start button label itself, the first video I saw on YouTube was early on, many years ago, I think 2012, something like that, 2011. And these people were putting up a target, and the horse would touch the target and then they'd throw the saddle on. But I thought, well, that's kind of cool. You know, this is kind of a neat way to use let behavior be more clean and pronounced. And so I started playing with that with a horse that would not be touched with her feet. She had been roped. She was a mini. She had been roped and tied and roped for entertainment, and then they wondered why they couldn't pick her feet up. So we did this target training. So she would touch her little nose on the target, and then I would pet the neck or touch the nose. You notice I'm starting with petting, but I had to get close because she would have bitten me besides. She would have taken my leg off if she could have. So it's present the target, be there, present the target, touch. So I'm doing the phases quickly, present the target, touch the shoulder, touch whatever, till finally she lifted her leg voluntarily. And this is another where I was running to Clicker Expo staff, you know, saying, okay, look at this. This is really cool. But there were several people that said, you're going to ruin your target behavior if you're not careful. Well, so what they were telling me was, one, if I raise the criterion too quickly and just take the behavior, assuming that the nose touch on the target meant it was a start button, because that's what I would have called it, you would ruin the initial start button. So a start button is not a get out of jail free card if you're playing Monopoly. A start button is just do it, you know, it's not that. It means the animal expects that when they touch it, something happens that will be okay for them. They accept that this is happening and they're expecting the reinforcer at the end of that. And so, but to expand that into the little steps I just described, they touch the target, I put my hand in the air, they touch the target, I put my hand in the air closer to the neck. By the way, each one of those has multiple reps. They touch the target, I put my hand in closer to the neck, touch the hair. Those are all part of what we call continue buttons, just to get people thinking in a different manner now. Those each have a component of the animal continues to offer behavior that we see and reinforce with the next step. Now that's deep. That's not beginning start button talk, but it is deep and it's what we want to explain. Go.
I just want to add some words that maybe can help also broaden the perception that it's about, because you said something about the consequences, it's about predictability, right? And we're letting horses understand and predict what is coming
Yes.
and predict what is the consequence of what they'll do. If I'll do this, then she'll do that.
Right.
And if I won't do this or I'll do that, she'll do something else. So this is where the choice and control, right, come into place when we have predictability. God, it's so much also in our lives, right? In humans' life. And
Well.
Peggy, we have a lot of conversation of how this is so applicable to our life as humans, to everybody. But so predictability is a big thing, and they need to, and they can predict by experiencing. So they need to experience repeated experiences,
Repetition. There it
repetition,
is.
right, of something
Repetition.
that when I do this, this happens, and not
And
only,
when I do this, this won't happen
right, yeah.
because we're able to read this. Oh, whoops, okay, I went too far, so we're not going to go that far next time.
Yeah, so it's
Sounds
not
pretty.
only, yeah, so it's not only go ahead, but also stop, or it's enough, or I need a break. And that's the dialogue that is more than just this mechanical button that, go ahead, do everything you want. So it's more of a little conversation that goes on. But it's not only giving them predictability and control, it also gives us, because we're both enjoying this process, it gives us trainers better, a more precise indication of the pace we need to go, because it helps clear the communication. And so I think, Peggy, maybe you have
Well,
something
and
to
Lily, I
add.
was going to say back to what Lily, well, I have to see if I can find that in my brain. But when you were starting this and you were talking about when we're realizing what the animal is bringing to the table, what we learn to follow the animal, that's such a different mindset. And I think that's going to be a critical part of this kind of care because we can see what the animal offers and say, yeah, let's go with that. I can work with that and still get where I want to go. It's that's dialogue.
Or
Or
on the
not.
other hand, when the behavior stuff slows down, we're kind of like it's or we suddenly don't get that very clear yes behavior that we chose and trained, then we need to slow down. And this is again following their lead into what they need and becoming more creative in the solutions we offer them, or slowing the pace or whatever. Yeah, sure.
And if I were to put a big balloon over it, a big bubble, it would fall under the category of shaping there. It would fall under the category of learning about shaping because that is in its own. You can raise criteria and you can do, classical conditioning, which is, let's not even dive there. But that for a person to understand how to watch what's being offered and make something of that information, that is a learned skill too. And I think some pre-course of, learning about how to observe is really going to be important for the people that are new to this in general, to learn cooperative care. If you haven't understood what shaping is about, is probably going to be a bigger challenge.
It's so much richer to follow that path, and that's where you get the learning from these
Learning.
individual animals guiding you with how might you need to maybe look at something a bit differently or follow a slightly different thread to what you were initially. You can't read a step by step. You do this thing and then you do this thing, and it's all.
Exactly. Or change something in the environment, because for this individual it will be easier. Or change something about your feeding strategy. Or there's so much we could do, but we need to listen to them.
Yeah, humans can be one trick ponies. You know that old thing about a one trick pony, man. Humans like, no, this is the way I do it. And to expand, oh, but I can do it this way, or I might try it this way, or I might to get the humans to offer creative ideas, just like we're asking the horses to offer behavior that's a little different. You know, that's a fun training path. Lucky you, Lily.
So that leads actually I'm just thinking from that of something that I've been really noticing and exploring recently, which is this the specific timing, that the sort of timing or maybe rhythm agreement that you maybe have with an individual horse learner that you're working with, which indicates to them, we're at the moment I'm looking for you to maybe offer more of this particular thing, or I'm looking for you to come up with something more, something original, something new. Or it's such an interesting, I'd love a bit more on that, because I think, well, this just it opens up so much dialogue to go down that route, rather than it just be, I mean, at its simplest, you can say you mark and you pay, which is obviously important, but there's so much in
So
that.
much more, so much more than that, right? And you pay, just the payment is where you pay when. But Peggy, I saw your eyes kind of like
Well,
blue.
the history, remember early shaping days, it was about using a little bit of extinction to get more behavior. That's what we were taught. So you get a pattern repeating. The animal offers click treat, offers click treat. See, I'm establishing offers click treat. Then we stop. The animal goes, wait. And we train them, wait, wait, wait. Wait, 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 wait. Like they'll start doing different things. 101 things to do with a box is a technique for teaching animals. Go on ahead, throw it, give me more, give me more. Well, in the beginning, they would wait forever. And the animal was going through, quote, an extinction process, like finally. So, but the changing of the rhythm, I think we've just refined in, I'm going to use the word refined in the way Anant and I train, and Monty Gwynn as well, and I've seen you do it, is that we just don't withhold as long. We're more inclined to say, thank you for your efforts. Let's start again. You give them a little bit of food to keep the motivation up. We don't just this and let the animal offer and offer and offer and get more, because you can get into extinction-induced rage. You can get some really not good things from extinction, but the timing and the rhythm is my favorite thing to play with shaping, is getting an extra. And then I do change my rhythm, like, oops, I waited a second. They go, wait, what? And that what might be the answer I'm looking for. Enough.
No, because I'm thinking about because we're actually building patterns, right? And this is coming back to predictability. We're building patterns that the animal kind of can predict, and then we can use that for the next step, which could include also the start button. So it's just like, and Peggy, I don't know if you, I'll start, but I know you describe it better. If we, one of the ways to kind of capture a behavior that the animal offers us is by either showing them an object and then feeding them and repeating this process until we kind of wait a little bit and they already expect the things that we were going to show, and they offer this expectant behavior or that we can capture and start marking. So I know it's very complex to just hear it in a sound. Yeah, you need to experience it, learn it, try it. But it's maybe the thing to take away is about building patterns and moving with the behaviors that those pattern offers to, because the behavior keeps changing. Yeah, and it's also what we're marking, where we're feeding. So it's so much more than just, touch and feed, yeah, or pay, or it's amazing how creative this can get.
And Lily, if we have time, let me do this. You can cut it out if you right. But let's try it because I have a little fun demo. I'm going to tell people if they're going to watch the video, go do this with somebody. Tell them with a person to have the person look at your hand when you hold it up. Then give them a hand slap as the payment. So the technique would look at you hold your hand, the person looks, then put your hand out, they tap the hand. So it's going to look like hand, feed, hand, feed, hand, feed. And what will happen is with the person they're doing with, the head will turn because you've established a predictable rhythm, and then you put the hand up. Then feed, and they turn, then you put the hand up. So it doesn't take long. And you might have to go back and reestablish the original pattern, but it doesn't take long for the horses that have done this where they go, oh, cool. Come on, hand, bring it on. So the horse is literally, their behavior is now making this thing happen. So it's like taking classical conditioning, click feed, hand, it's taking something that is unconditioned stimulus. I won't even go there. So it's taking classical conditioning and quickly turning it into an operant behavior. The animal says, oh, I got it. I make your hand go up. Give me the food.
Yeah, that was
That's such a
game-changing for
fun
me
lesson,
when
isn't
you
it?
explained that. That was wow. Yeah,
Isn't that fun?
mind blown and amazingly powerful. Yeah, so fun.
And it's really can be a part of our training all the time. Like Susan says, we don't need to split hairs between classical and operant, like people like to do, that we can find operant components quickly. But it does take the skill and the knowledge and the experience to say, okay, this is what the horse is repeating. There's back to that being able to
Right,
read.
exactly. It really lovely ties up to everything we said from following the horse, letting them have control, right? From the moment we kind of like they're more passive to the moment where they can, affect us
And this is so just to clarify, if there are listeners that don't have a huge background in the terminology and things like that. So talking about the emotional turmoil with this withholding, so that's where you wouldn't feed. That's the withholding of the payment, and then the extinction is basically the behavior that they have been receiving a payment for stops, but that because eventually because they realize that they're not, because the payment's not coming. But that leads to an emotional turmoil. And so
Right.
instead of using that type of timing, we're talking about being a lot more nuanced about how you change the timing, because otherwise you might only ever have one behavior, right?
Right. Well said. Well said. Well said. We got to do something to signal, hey, can you do something a little bit different?
Because horses don't automatically know the cue that you are. That's another thing, is that they a horse doesn't automatically know what cue it is that you're what behavior it is, sorry, that you're cueing for. And I think so that is a useful discussion as well. Sometimes people who are new to training expect that a horse is almost already installed with a set of cues.
You think? Yeah, there's a good one. He knows what I'm thinking. He knows
And pressure relief
what I want.
sometimes, I think, in our human brain. So if you're using negative reinforcement, you apply some form of pressure, and a response may not be forthcoming, but may be forthcoming. And so that can lead you to think that the horse knows this cue. Actually, they're responding to something. And coming circling back around to the reinforce what reinforcement actually means, are they actually going to respond the same way the next time around? Have they learned something, or did they just respond in that moment to,
Or
so
am
if
I
you,
going to have to use more pressure to get what I wanted?
and so you can be getting erratic responses when that understanding, when that misunderstanding is there. About how the horse may respond to your actions and how maybe you are responding to the horse's actions. So I think that's a really
The system for this is a little different. If you're going to be teaching negative reinforcement, you have to apply the aversive first. That aversive is what motivates the horse to do something. A fly can teach a horse to lift its leg, right? It's not a mat, but so if the fly lands, the horse goes, and finally lifts its leg, fly goes away. Well, the fly trained the horse to lift the leg. The next time the horse will have learned, because it's about learning. If we just put this all about learning, then the horse will repeat the behavior and it'll probably repeat it more quickly the next time the fly lands, or the horse will stomp that leg. It's going to be more big in its response. But with shaping, we have to kind of figure out how to be creative in our prompts. I'm not going to call them cues yet, because a cue is something that's learned, is put on the behavior after it's learned. So whatever prompts or painting
environmental
or
setup.
targeting, what Anna?
Sometimes it's even about how we set up the
The environment.
environment that will kind
Go.
of help the horse offer what we want them, because with positive reinforcement, they need to offer behaviors for us to reinforce.
So it's a little different to approach it from a shaping the reinforcer is we're watching and scanning for behaviors, then we mark that behavior with a click or whatever, and then give them the food. So the learning is still there, but the technique of teaching behavior, since we don't have an aversive that's applied, we've got to be creative in how we set that up. And so luring or props or prompts, realizing those have to be faded quickly, because otherwise then they become dependent. So you want to be able the horse to be able to offer that behavior on its own. So with a not as brilliant at chin rests, with these, if this gets established, the horse still has to learn that this body part goes on the person's hands or whatever we're doing for, and that's interesting to shape that behavior and capture that behavior till it repeats. Then we can say, all right, we can give it a cue, hands, verbal. We could just present them, because let's face it, that's a pretty clear cue to start this behavior. The appearance of the chin rest, that's a pretty clear cue. It's built right into the behavior. And then you can have, oh, but we won't. My horse that my shoulder, my mini, where my shoulder is the prop. And anytime the shoulder is anywhere close, then the head is here, because that's where she puts her head so I can get kissed. But
I
that's
think it's really helpful what you say about keep kind of checking in. Now, what is the horse actually learning?
burning.
It's again, sometimes the thinking tends to be the other way around, and we need to turn it on its head. It's not what are you applying to the horse, it's what are they actually getting,
Taking away,
what are they
yes.
taking away?
Exactly, exactly.
Huge, huge. Goes right up there in the top of the bullet list of what you take away from this test. What are they learning? Well, and Susan Freeman, it's like it's called a learning science. I mean, that is really, it's a learning science. I love that.
So I guess it would be good probably to just for the last bit just hear some stuff about if people aren't familiar with what you do. Some of the cooperative care kind of contexts and things that you have trained. So say for example, maybe chin rests for, well, lots of different procedures, I suppose, and mouth open behaviors and eye medication and that kind of thing as an overview, and then we can tell people about your offerings as well with
Thank
that.
you. Anat, go for it.
So I'm not sure I completely
Here's a long
understood.
list. We both have a nice long list.
Right. So just to describe some of the behaviors with chin rest. Okay. So yeah, for me, a chin rest, a different version of it is a big behavior that helps us from eye care to applying ointment, doing stuff to facial area, to trimming, injections, blood draws, and that's it's not about the actual behavior as it's the behavior that it was taught as like we discussed before as a way to predict what's going to happen. So it's not that the chin rest and I can do everything. It's a continuous conversation. And it has this transformative effect that they can say I can we can start if it's only me or sometimes it's me and my vet and also for hoof care which is not a chin rest is less useful but I call it leg rest right? My horses know how to pick their own legs. We never take their legs. They pick their legs up and they rest them on our hands. And it's a useful behavior to whatever hoof care we need to give. And Peggy, back to you with maybe you can share about I think mouth.
Yeah, those horses that bring us the things we need to train never would have had this on the plate because, you know, it's the discomfort for the horse. But oh God, help me, Lily. I just realized I've been spelling it backwards. It's EOTHR.
EOTRH.
Yeah, I always get it backwards. EOTRH. I had it completely different. But so basically, the root of the tooth gets a growth in of more massive root, and a big root bulb happens, and then the teeth get so sore the animal has to have his teeth so pulled. So with my little guy, he had a numerous teeth pulled, and then finally all of his teeth on his bottom front teeth. Except why did he leave the canine? But he's not going to watch this. Why did he leave that? Anyway, so he has one little stub of a thing down here. But that led to lots and lots, because before the surgery that was going to happen to remove all these, and I knew I was going to be faced with care of lots of gaping holes. But we had some behaviors in place. So, for example, he was shaped. This is a fun thing, to shape a horse to open their mouth. And he could do that, and he could hold his mouth open so I could apply meds. We went from there to syringing. And so and my favorite thing I think I've trained over the years was I had a syringe with yummy, yummy stuff, soft, because I knew he was going to be not able to be chewing and didn't want a lot of stuff happening in that vicinity with gaping holes. If I sent you a picture, well, you wouldn't be shocked, but anyway, I was shocked when I was. So it was, the syringe had good stuff in it. The other syringe had like saline and something I could rinse, the kind of the syringe where I could like pick out the debris that was going into these holes. I was able to do this care without having my vet come multiple times, right? I was able to do this care. So it was, he'd open his mouth, I'd syringe, I would click, and I'd put a syringe of yummy stuff in the other side. So I had two syringes working. That was really cool to train. And good for him. And it's still a powerful, but I'm gonna be really expansive on my description. Is for me, all of training is a start button now. I am waiting, after a few repetitions, I'm waiting for the horse to give me a signal that we're ready to do whatever it is we're doing. To me, it's a way of life.
That's
And can, yeah, it's become that far. And call it a default attention behavior if you want. That's another subject. But we said hoof care, mouth care, shots, ears, ear prep, getting scales out of ears. Let me see. I've done eyes. I've done medicine in eyes. I've done where they have goop in their eyes, getting that out. Any kind of, yeah, application of drops, medicine in the mouths, syringing for wormers. What else? And I'm trying to do the list fast.
Spray, fly sheets,
Oh,
you name
yes.
it, whatever we need to do, whatever we need to do with them, right? Or think we need to do to them, we can do with them. And it's a wonderful journey, and it's transformative journey, because it's the behaviors just get stronger. It's kind of like they want to, they enjoy it's so it's nice. I mean, some behaviors will not become their best.
Oh,
You know, like blood draw is still not my horse's dream,
favorite.
but they'll cooperate and with ease, right? But some, like a hoof care, our challenge is who will be first, and how will
Yeah.
the rest of the herd want, you know, will have patience to wait while they're still need to wait for their turn to get their hoof care. So it's
Now, and in truth, so the little horse that I acquired a few months ago that I had done training with, the deaf horse, had emergency colic surgery. There were things that were not in place. She did not have a rich history of cooperative care behaviors. So, but still, even in the midst of that, and I was doing the aftercare. You know, we got her home within a week, and I was the one that was doing all the aftercare. So there was a lot she learned on the spot because of the training she had was still choice and control. And some, you know, they took a lot of control away from her at the hospital. There was no, but even when I visited her in the hospital and I was able to do some of the initial stuff that we did, I knew that it was, Oh, it's my human that does predictable things, and I understand, and I get to choose. And her response in the hospital was very touching. It was a really touching experience.
And
So
it's an important thing because sometimes we can't prepare them to everything, but when they have experience with learning and with lots of other behaviors, usually it's useful, and we can either they bounce back really fast from aversive experience, or we don't need to get aversive because we can come up with solutions based on prior experiences.
I love that. I love what
I
you
feel like,
said in that about anything we can do to them, we can do with them. I love that.
oh, that is brilliant. And
Excellent.
can I honor the fact that really, you look at places like the Shedd Aquarium, where Ken is again another one of my mentors, where they have this conversation that goes between the trainer and the curator and the veterinarian, and they're all together. And everything that happens to those animals, it's a three-way conversation. They honor each other's expertise and what they bring, and they make decisions in a cooperative way. So here we are, horse owners, trying to do it ourselves and then voicing it off on the vet that we can't do, and the vet saying, wait, I'm not going to put my life at risk. That's not your job.
It's right, and it's an important point that we didn't cover. Kind of like it's not only because we're kind of like nice people who wants the horses to have, I mean, it's part of it, to have a nice experience, but it's also safety. It's so much safer, so much safer, and also much healthier. I'm an owner of IR horses. I know that to measure their insulin. If they're stressed, I will get
Absolutely.
false response, the
Absolutely.
blood, right? So it's not. So yeah, Peggy, this was.
Actually, one of the reasons, one of the patients that really was part of the impetus for me to find out more about helping needle-shy horses was he wasn't only needle phobic, he was vet phobic. And he colicked one time, and he was so terrified that we couldn't treat him until he was really quite sick. So this is, it was he would try to kill someone. So this is the thing that we there's no quite like you say, we're trying to do something in a nice way and be ethical, and also just in order to be ethical, sometimes you need to be effective. And the only way of being effective with that is you can't get stronger, in terms of you couldn't physically restrain him, or so the only thing would be to change his expectation of what was about to come next.
Yep. And that takes, in a perfect world, the vet would say, okay, here's the trainer. And the trainer would be saying, okay, now I'm going to show you how to do this on your own so that we can have a three-way conversation and you have to learn. That would be the ideal world if we, if whatever gets in our way from doing those things. So then
And we do need to
the
have
vet
that.
shows up. The vet shows up and says, okay, I'm here. I'm going to stand over here while you do those things. And wow, let me give him a few bites of food. And so then the trainer builds a relationship and the vet builds a relationship. And the wouldn't it be fun if we could live in that world?
Yeah, absolutely.
I want that.
It's more rewarding.
And isn't it nice as a vet to come and that the horses will like you? You'll be
Absolutely.
instead of, I mean, it's also, I think it's always a win-win, for everybody. If everybody are happy with the situation and successful, it's
It's
making money.
doable.
Absolutely. Well, that was another part of me when I was in mixed general practice, and I was thinking, I'm spending a lot of my time, with animals, kind of running or leaving with their tail between their legs and restraining them. And partly, unfortunately, just for practical reasons of time, because you have such a short appointment slot with each patient. And so, in some cases, the whole model needs to change in order to allow us to.
Yes.
But in some cases, actually, all you need is just to slow down a little bit during
Isn't
the
that
actual
true?
visit.
Yeah, one moment of waiting.
One moment.
Right.
Really interesting. Or even just when the horse is a little bit more attention and they know what's coming. That is even.
Or following the behavior, right? If they're kind of like avoiding, kind of like letting them say no, and
See,
then
that's
trying
exactly
to.
that. You can't, because if the only tool is negative reinforcement, saying no just got reinforced. So that having, if you want to say balanced toolkit, well, we won't go there. But flip it, just positive reinforcement is a different approach.
Yes.
Let's pay attention to that.
Well, thank you so much. I think that that's it's actually amazing that we got to that point. It's exactly an hour, I think, which was good timing. Just before we sign off, I think that you do have some offerings coming up, and just to let people know how they can find you. I know that you run a cooperative care course, which is next, running in March, and you're going to be presenting at Clicker Expo as well. And just in general, how can people find you? So if you want to give some more details on those things and how people can get in touch with you if they want to learn more.
Go on, Peggy.
Okay. I made an easy website. I managed to get this domain name quite a while ago, and it's the easiest way to find me is clickertraininghorses.com. Imagine that. But yes, I would like to say that this Anant and myself and Monty, which we've done this now since 2020, we're presenting at Clicker Expo. And we're talking about continue buttons. So it's a great chance if you want to hear this in a different context and see live demos. And I would like to encourage you, that's Clicker Expo Live. I'm not sure if you can still sign up for that. So that'll be interesting. When you do your prod this podcast, it may be, we might have to see how that works. But you can always look at the videos on demand. That means you could purchase the rental for a year of that one video. That's another possibility. So that's going to be a neat resource for people that just want to learn more about it, see it, and then dive into the courses. Like I know Lily is presenting her own course, and Anant has the one we've scheduled in March, right? Basically, and I spoke for you, but you can speak for yourself if you'd like.
It's okay. You covered it lovely. So,
Cover it.
yeah, and I'll put the links in the show notes of the podcast so that you can
Oh,
find
yeah.
out. You're listening to the
Wonderful.
recording some time after the fact. So this
And
is the
Anant's website. I'm
yes.
sorry. What was your website, my dear?
Horse friendship. So maybe we can. Yeah, we can. Send you and you'll be able to maybe put it in the notes in the session notes. Great.
Because we're recording this in December 2024, but people may be listening months later even, and just to find the offerings that are coming up next. So yeah,
Yes. Thank you.
thank you so much. That was a
Oh, trainer talk.
yeah. That was brilliant. Thank
Wonderful.
you so much.
So fun. Anant and I, we could do this for hours.
Yeah, we can.
Oh,
I mean, it's great. There's so much to talk about that I'm sure that we can do again even.
Fun.
Yeah.
And when it works, and when we go,
Yes.
okay, let's
Yeah.
reevaluate. And
Yeah.
oh, God, just things along the way. It's been really fun to have a. I like trainer talk. Trainer talk is fun.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to do this. It was brilliant.
Thank you for inviting us. It
Thank
was fun.
Remember, it is not too late to join the Needle Shyness online course. Course materials were released on the 1st of January, but if you sign up now, you can still take advantage of all the live support from me, including 3 Zoom calls, a 30-minute one-to-one coaching call with me, and feedback on photo and video submissions. The first Zoom Q&A call is on the 11th of January. Head to www.nurturingnatureequine.co.uk/needles to join. Thanks for listening to the Vital Horse Podcast, where you can find discussions focused on helping horses in ways that combine scientific principles and evidence with compassion and understanding. Do subscribe if this content has rung true for you. To work with me in a way that honours both head and heart, check out my online and in-person offerings at www.nurturingnatureequine.co.uk. If you are facing problems or are trying to answer questions with your horse, remember that physical, mental, and emotional well-being are inextricably interconnected, that there is a wisdom to nature and to the body that we can assist, and that cultivating meaningful relationships with our animal companions holds an important key to the well-being of all of us. Deep awareness and a compassionate process will enable us to find sustainable, ethical solutions. See you for the next episode, and look forward to working with you too.